Okay. Let's do WBAI because I absolutely loved. I love DC, and DC has a whole different set of problems.
No, you said WBAI, WPFW. WPFW.
Houston.
Houston.
I'm sorry, DC.
What DC? WPFW. Okay.
I'm never going to remember all these call signs. Okay.
No problem.
Okay, DC. I love, except for do not try and take. There is no such thing as getting to Amtrak if you are disabled. I got to tell you, there's no shuttle service. You can get there. Ron is a doll. If he hadn't have been able to get my scooter into the back of his car, we would not have made it.
Wow.
So if you're disabled, I want you guys to know there's no way to get to Amtrak in D.C. We had a real problem. And so Ron's wonderful car actually holds a scooter and luggage and everything. He's a great guy. But we couldn't get there. So that's a problem. People need to learn about what you need to write down and keep information on. And disabled can't pull, you know, luggage behind wheelchairs and stuff. So that's a fun thing. He's a brat. Anyhow, okay. Here you've got a station that's got all the newest furniture. You've got cubicles. It's great. You can move anything around for anybody, which is the ideal situation, right? Because you can set it up high, low. You can set it for the reach of any person, and it's wonderful. It sounds like now you're in the ideal situation. But here lies the problem. If you need to change a switch, a light switch, anything, you need the management's approval. The owner of the building's approval. Because you're not the owner of the building. Somebody else makes all the arrangements. And based on how your lease is, tells you what changes you can make and what you can't in a building like this. When we went up to talk to the management, you don't get the owner, you get the building manager, right? So we go up and we talk to him about the disabled parking, and we go up to talk to him about the front door entrance. Now, they have three stairs to go into the front door entrance on one side, and on right, there's a little thin wall, and then they have an accessible entrance. And there's a security system on the left-hand side where the three stairs are, where you flip a badge past it, and you can get in, and there's a little box you talk into, right? Now, on the right side is where they do their delivery entrances. But they lock that door after 5 o'clock at night.
The management?
The accessible entrance. They lock. To go into the front, this is just to get in the front door to get into the building. Now, there's only a couple of things it needs. It needs a little kick plate on the glass door so that your feet don't go through the door when your wheelchair hits it. And they need an electrical badge over on that side, too, and a button to press. Because there's no way you can get up the three stairs if you're in a wheelchair or a scooter, right? And this manager says, oh, we can't afford to put that in. It would just be too expensive to do the electrical wiring. We demand every tenant has to come in through the other door. I liked Chandra's response. And I said to him, excuse me.
In other words, everyone in a wheelchair is a bunch of baggage.
Yep. Ben, stop. And I said to him, excuse me, you understand you have an accessible entrance there, but this side isn't accessible. Mm-hmm. And I said, if you're making that demand, then you're volunteering to make that side accessible, right? Since you're the one demanding it, and you realize you've got three stairs over there, so now you want to put in either a lift or you want to put in ramping because it, you know, goes up a slope. He goes, no, that's just our demand. I said, no, excuse me. You've just made the demand that you don't want to simply move some electrical, that you can't handle it, and you're telling this radio station that that's your demand, not theirs. Since you're the one throwing out these rules, then you're the one who's going to have to make that side accessible when it's so simple to just do a little wiring. My dad works for DOJ. I know the rules. I said, good. Then when I write up my report that you just made this demand, you're going to show it to your father over at DOJ, because what you just did is against the law. And if they get sued, we're suing you. And I'm going to be their witness, because what you just did is illegal. I said, so you're going to demand this, and you're going to make that site accessible then. Because you can't make that demand, because you just discriminated against anybody who can't climb stairs and anybody who is short, of short stature and can't even reach where you have the badges. And no one can let anybody know after 5 o'clock that they're even here. Well, that's our rules. I said, oh, you have that in writing then. That's our demand. I said, then you'll send us a copy of that, won't you? It is in the lease, right? Okay, it's against the law. He can't do that, especially when they have an accessible entrance over here. What you have is a contract problem, because it depends on how your lease reads. If your lease reads that you can make changes, then you can make them. If the lease reads that only the owner of the building can make changes, then that's the way it is. It all depends on how the lease reads, how you can negotiate. So in the report, I describe to DC how to negotiate this, because that's what you're up against. Depending on who, and you need your attorneys to look at that, depending on who can do it. Because the situation you have is you have two problems there. That's one, and the bathroom is the other. The bathroom was obviously built prior to ADA, because there's no way, and you know what, you can get into the toilet room if you use a scooter or a wheelchair. Two problems. One, it's too thin, and even the aisle going to it is too thin. But they have these wonderful little hat racks that stick out, and the door hits the hat rack, so the door sticks out so far that even if you wanted to get there, if you could, you couldn't make the turn into the stall. And it's too thin anyhow. The only way you could possibly make that bathroom accessible is to turn it into a single-stall bathroom, which really isn't that expensive to do. So I make the recommendations. And since it's on the floor that they're on, it could be done relatively easily.
Again, that would be, that has to be in the lease, but they can do
it
that.
It would have to be in the lease. And I mean, the company could volunteer to do it themselves if they would allow them to do it, because it's such an, it wouldn't be that expensive to do. Again, it has to be negotiated through, and I would not negotiate it through this manager, this young guy. I would negotiate it through the owner. So I give them all the recommendations on how to do it, and I highly suggest they go to the owner and not to the manager, because this kid just doesn't get it. So that's why I put in the report step by step what you would do, and I make it very clear in the report that if you get sued, you would have to then turn around and sue them, because they're the ones rolling the dice. So the few things that change you would have to make there, other than changing some door weights because they're so heavy, very, very heavy, like opening the door to one of the interview rooms. I almost killed myself opening the interview door to, I think it's B. It was like 40 pounds, pull-push pressure. Maximum pull-push pressure, ladies and gentlemen, on all these doors. If it's a fire door, in every state other than California, is 15 pounds pull-push pressure. Get rid of the magnets, people. I don't care what door it is. I don't care what your soundproofing rules are. You cannot have a pull-push pressure over 15 pounds.
And how much is this one here in Washington, D.C.? 40?
Yeah. You got to change these door weights and pull push pressure. And I have nerve damage, so believe me, I know how bad it is. If the fire department came in and put a sticker on your door, when you open the door, there'll be a sticker on the hinge, and it will say it's a fire door, then the maximum amount it can be is 15 pounds.
Okay.
If it doesn't have a fire code and you're in California, the maximum it could be is 8.5 pounds. If it's an interior door, it's supposed to only be 5 pounds. If it's an exterior door, is your 15 pounds. Unless it's a, and that's a fire door. If it's California, it's 8.5 pounds unless it's a fire door. Okay, in other states, because it's federal law, it's up to 15 pounds. Nothing more. All these studio doors, guys and gals, wherever you are, figure out a way to get the weight down on the pull, push, pressure. I'll even write down where to get a gauge so you can check it out, and you can go check all your doors, but you got to get the pull, push, pressure down.
Now, is this was that recently, the standard?
No, this law has been in effect.
Oh, really?
Yeah, forever.
Long time, forever.
Yeah, since 19, over 15 years.
Wow.
And you got to change those weights. They're a killer.
It's,
1990 is when the law passed. That's when the ADA passed. So
there were other 504 regulations.
Well, they had the federal law on the ADA passed in 1990, had 3 years to comply, but 502 passed in 1973. I don't know if the pull push pressure was it was? Okay. Okay, so you've had since 1972 to comply with that law.
And how old is the building? How old is this building?
We don't talk about Marriott's. Marriott's has
no,
been...
No, not here. Oh. I'm talking about the Washington, D.C. building. How old is it? How old is the building, A.C.? Do you know?
It doesn't matter. Okay. You still, at least since 1990, should have not... And I got to tell you, the very first time I went into New York was when I found out how bad it was in the studios. So New York is the same problem. Although I want to give New York a lot of credit on my report, since Robert has gotten there, he's done a lot of cleanup. He's gotten a lot of the clutter out of there. The attitude was pretty good. I wanted to, when I went in, but you still have to do a lot of work with New York. It's still same as the old report, but the attitude was better.
Francine, did I hear you say? So you've already gone over the New York and the Berkeley station with this board in person?
No, I went when I came to the first time. The first time I came and reported, I did New York and I did. Berkeley.
I know you did the reports earlier, but did you present it live to the board like you're doing here?
Yeah.
Was that was in D.C., was it?
That was in New York.
Berkeley.
That was in New York.
Okay. Some of us weren't on the board
in June of last year then.
I didn't realize that. Yeah. Okay.
June of last year, I think, was New
right.
York.
Right. Yeah. What I'd like to do, because I know everybody's running late, is I'd like to do the tape, the sensitivity tape, and then go into questions and answers on readily achievable, reasonable accommodations and so on, because a lot of the questions you have will fall into those categories, if that's okay, unless you have specifics right now.
Well, Chandra has something, but I just want to remind the board, ultimately our executives are responsible for making these decisions and planning coming to us. What we need to do is understand the broad outlines so that of issues as opposed to their details, so that we can, you know, make the appropriate choices and also raise alternatives if we feel that the plans of the executives don't meet the needs. But Chandra, go ahead.
Yeah, before Francie starts the training, I really think, since we have her here for this very important issue, that we get everybody back in the room. I mean, if we don't have our board members here for the training, what's the sense of her doing this?
Yeah,
so is there a possibility to get not only the board members here, but the GMs and the PDs that are present and anybody on staff?
Okay. What we can do, actually, we're just, you were going to do one last thing before we started the training. Yeah, Mark, if you could do me the favor of just asking any board members and staff who are out in the hall to please enter that we're about to start the training segment.
It's going to take them a couple of minutes to set up just the tape anyhow, so we can have that happen.
Okay, great. Well, why don't people, rather than doing a formal break, if people need to get up and stretch their legs for a minute, do so, but we can continue here with people who have questions for Francie. When will you be ready to start with the training?
They've got to set up the tape.
Okay,
so they give about 10 minutes.
Okay, in 10 minutes, I'd like all members and staff to be back in here.
while Zuberi's trying to find the tape on the on my CD, I'm going to just tell you a couple little things. When we're talking, we're going to talk about things like a front approach and a side approach. So you'll understand for those people who don't use wheelchairs and scooters, Ben can do what's called a front approach because he's in a wheelchair. So he can move up to a table and just go straight in. Okay, I'm in a scooter, and when you're in a scooter, you can't do a front approach like to a door or to a table. I have to come up, and I have to take my scooter, and I have to move around like this. Now, a lot of times you see us carrying tape measures around, and you wonder, why do we measure all these things, right? Well, now I can do this, and then whoever's talking, I'll have all three of you introduce yourself. Okay. In the men's bathroom in L.A., we specifically point out one thing, and that there's a partition that sticks out beyond the urinal. It's about somewhere around 23 inches past the urinal. Now, why do we point this out and say it has to be removed? Does anybody know? No, because when you come up on a side approach, if you can't get really close to the toilet and you're 23 or 24 inches, 2 feet away, let's face it, gentlemen, unless you have really good aim.
And pressure.
Okay, there's going to be a mess. Because you cannot get close enough, okay, to the toilet. It's that simple. You got to take the partition out. That's what it comes down to. When you're doing a side approach, guys, that's why we walk around with tape measures, is to make sure you can get close enough to things. And I know sometimes you think we're crazy when we walk around with these tape measures, but there is a reason for everything. And that's why sometimes when you think, what are these people doing? It does have a real reason, okay? It's not just because we want to give you a bad time or we want to just sit there and measure things for the fun of it. We don't always explain it, but sometimes if we just tell you why we're doing it, it makes sense, right? So that, I just wanted to give you that one just so you'd have a little fun with it, okay? So if we're telling you that, hey, we're not after the Olympics here, now you know why, okay? So I just had to have a little fun with that one. Okay, so we're going to go into the Ten Commandments. This is a great sensitivity tape put out by a gentleman named Tim Harrington. It really loosens things up. It gives you a little idea about sensitivity on the ADA. And we chose it because it is very light, but it gives you a basic idea when you're talking to disabled, when you're working with people with disabilities, with multiple types of disability. It gives you an idea where people are coming from with different types of disabilities. So please enjoy. We played this when we did the trainings at each station, and everybody seemed to respond to it really well. So, why? It's on both. She asked if it was audio described, and I think you can order it audio described straight from Tim Harrington. I'd suggest anyone who wants it, I'll give you the information from Tim Harrington. I think it's a great tape. I loved it the first time I saw it. I think it's a fun tape, but it gives you a little idea where disabled come from. And I think it really just loosens you up a little bit, right?
Yes.
I love the part where the guy leans on the wheelchair and he moves forward.
Oh, yeah.
To me.
That was so good. That was like, one of the best things in it.
Oh, yeah.
Does that really happen to you? People really
it happens chairs? All the time. You'd be amazed. You'd be amazed.
I like to say when they do that,
oh, do I know you? I've forgotten your name.
Yeah. But it's a great tape, and it's a good way to sensitize people. And when we played it at each of the stations that we went to, it loosened everybody up, and they just start talking to each other, and they bring up different incidents and different things that they knew, and it was like, great, this is a good way to get people talking. And so I've decided now I use it everywhere I go now when I'm doing a training. So I love it. Yeah.
Excuse me. Let me bring you a mic.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jolie Mason. You know, I think it's also very important, the idea of humor with disability, because that is one of the things that really helps, you know, get you through difficult situations. Generally, when a person with a disability is in a new situation, they are experiencing a certain amount of stress that they may not be sharing with every single person in their environment, because everybody doesn't need to know. So also take that into account, that idea of asking, can I do anything? Really, really makes a difference. Also, when they were talking about figures of speech, I do want to mention using figures of speech like something being retarded, a lame comment, and those kinds of things. Those aren't figures of speech.
Right.
And it really isn't necessarily up to the person with a disability to jump at everybody in the world. But in other words, to say, let's not rush into this blindly, when you mean let's not do this without thinking. Being blind, you have to think a whole lot about stuff and figure things out ahead of time. So actually doing something blindly means you're going to be very careful and thoughtful and make some contingency planning. I've gone places blindly, and I'll tell you, it is like that. So remember that idea about speech. It is really important to recognize that what you may think is a figure of speech really can actually hurt somebody's feelings.
Yeah, we and when we do the training, we do talk about that with people, depending on where you're at and what you say. We talk about that, what to say, and don't call somebody a retard or stuff like that. There's a point where you can say something and a point where you can't, and we do that when we do the training with the employees. The one thing I was sad about, we were able to do trainings with all the paid staff, but we weren't able to do trainings with the volunteers at the different stations because we weren't able to arrange it in time. But hopefully that they'll be able to continue that with the different stations with other disabled.
Francie?
But we have to get onto the training, I'm sorry, with the board.
I just need a sense of time. We actually don't have so much more time left, and I also want to be sure in this. I wanted to give Jane Jackson the opportunity to make some comments, because it's really her activism more than anything else, along with Chandra's efforts, that have brought us to the point where we're doing this. So can
what
you give
time
me a sense
it?
Of? Well, right now it's 20 to 5. We had 3 hours allocated, but we've sort of been behind.
What time did we start?
We started at 2:24. So in terms of 3 hours, we have basically 30 minutes before we've got the full 3 hours. I don't know how much of that you need, but I did want to offer Jane at least a piece of time, because, again, it's her work over the years that have brought this to us. I think
during our training?
If there's time available, I'm asking you, what more time do you need? How much more time is there in the program?
Well, we still have to go through readily achievable, reasonable accommodations, undue burden. We still have to cover transportation.
Okay, so you're going to need essentially the entire remaining half hour. Well, after that, we can just... Yes, Jane?
I just would like to remind you of what I...
I would just like to remind you of what I said this morning under public comment, that I would have no comment on this presentation.
Okay, then thank you. Okay,
later, however, at another meeting...
Okay. So we have about another half hour left. And Francie, from what I understand, you'll need the full half hour.
Yeah, and I didn't know the break time was being taken out of our time.
Okay. Can we just let Jolie follow up? She just has a follow-up comment.
I'm sorry? Yeah,
can
go
we
ahead.
Let Jolie follow up?
I just also wanted to make a comment about service dogs. People who have service dogs love dogs, so they actually do want to talk to you about the dog, but ask the person, not the dog, about the dog. And also remember to mention to the person who has the service dog, is it okay at this time? Because remember that stress that we're not all telling you about?
Hold on a moment. I don't think you have everybody's full attention.
Oh, I have a service dog. In fact, I have a seeing eye dog. and she is fantastic, and I love her dearly. I am more than interested in talking to people about dogs because it's so much more interesting than talking to somebody who has going to tell me about their second cousin whose brother roomed with a person who was blind. So I like talking about dogs a lot more, but actually ask the person who has the service animal if it's okay to pet the animal or to say hello or those kinds of things. But don't worry, we love talking about dogs. It's, again, that humor idea is really, really important. Thanks. Thanks, Francie.
Thanks. Francie, from your comment about the break, do I take it that you'd like the 10 more minutes as well be to get through what you have to get through?
Yes.
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. The other areas we were asked to cover were the basic information on what is a path of travel. We were asked to cover transportation issues, like at the buildings, and what should you know about it. What arrangements should you be making when you're going to, like, for instance, a hotel? What do you need to know? Anything from the hotel flights, shuttles, rental cars, and so on. What's a reasonable accommodation? Working with staff, volunteers, and fundraisers. How to get equipment and assistive devices. Environmental illness.
Actually, Francie, I'm sorry to interrupt you. The people who are doing the translating have actually asked that anybody who's going to be giving us information from something they're reading, if they can give that document to the translators first so that they can translate in sync with what you're doing. It would be helpful to them. So if what you're reading is from text, do you have anything that you have a copy of?
One copy.
Okay, in that case, if you could, they pointed out that there's a tendency people have to read through quickly when they're reading. If you could just read at conversational pace, they can keep up with you on the translation.
I was just giving the titles of the areas we'll be talking about. What I'm having passed out right now, though, they can have a copy. And these are access terminology that we want to cover. And we're going to be talking about what is readily achievable. This is what we were covering earlier. What is the reasonable accommodation? And they can have, he's got more copies right here. What is a reasonable accommodation? What causes an undue burden? In the reports, when you read them, what is an LBF, which is your pounds of force when you're doing your doors? And who is covered by the ADA? There's three different terminologies of who's covered under the ADA. So I give it to you in this piece of paper you just got under the ADA. There's three different ways that somebody's covered under the ADA. And then Sharon is going to do a simple presentation, but so you understand what about signage. So you'll understand what you need to know about signage so that somebody doesn't tell you something you should, anything different than what you really need to know. Because Sharon owns a signage company, and she's also an expert on signage. And I want her to do a few minutes on signage for you, because it's really important to know that. Do you want to do that first so that we make sure that they do truly understand it?
The thing that has been made so different about signage when the ADA came into being is the fact that Braille signs with raised letters came on the scene. This totally revolutionized the way that a lot of sign companies, architectural sign companies, had to think about signs. However, I think that by focusing on Braille signs and raised letter signs, many, many people miss what I think is extremely important about signage and accessibility to buildings, and that is that signage can help just about every group of persons with disabilities. Take, for instance, people who are deaf and hard of hearing, people who cannot speak clearly, for instance. Those are people who need good, clear, informational and directional signage, probably much more than a person who is blind or visually impaired who could go up and ask someone a question. So we miss out on a lot by only thinking of people who are blind and visually impaired when we talk about signs. Take someone who has a cognitive disability. Again, that's a person who needs clear, easy to read, consistent signage that uses terminology that repeats throughout a building. For instance, you don't want to start by calling something the security department and then somehow midway it changes to the police office, that kind of thing that I've seen all over. People who have mobility problems need directional signage to accessible facilities, and they need it in ways that get them around buildings and through facilities in an efficient manner. If you're in a wheelchair that's motorized, you may not have a really bad problem, but let's say that you have cerebral palsy and you are really determined to use every bit of ability that you have. You may be using arm crutches, and it may cause you to become exhausted if you have to walk all the way down a hallway and find that that restroom is inaccessible. And if someone had just put a sign at the proper point with a wheelchair and an arrow that said accessible restroom, you would have gone the right way in the beginning. Nowadays, for instance, buildings don't tend to feature elevators the way they did when elevators first came in. They were like the grand staircase. They were considered, you know, wonderful things to have, and they were featured in buildings. Now people hide them down corridors, and you go into a lobby, and there's a corridor to the right and a corridor to the left, and you have no idea which corridor the elevator is in. So I want to point that out because the signage can be a means of accessibility to a whole gamut of people with disabilities. So, yes.
If I may make a comment. Sometimes even those of us in power wheelchairs, we may have had a long day. We're going all over the place, and we may be out of energy in our wheelchair, and we can't afford to go down a long hall, a block long, and then to go back to get to that place because we might not be able to get to our room that night.
So, and that's just one more point about how important this kind of simple, clear, easy-to-read directional and informational signage can be. We know, however, that people who are functionally blind, that means people who do not have usable vision, right now we don't really have a good way of them accessing that type of signage. We have talking signs that are coming in, but they're not there yet, and we don't have rules for them. So let me just quickly, for those of you who are in charge of signage in a building, let me give you a very quick way to think about signage. You have two or three different kinds of signs. The first kind of signs is the kind that we think about as ADA signs, and those are the signs with raised letters in Braille. I brought one with me today that is required in California and should be required throughout the United States. The Department of Justice thinks so. I'm sorry. It's an exit route sign, a tactile exit route sign with Braille. So whenever we identify a door, including a door with an exit sign over it, we need to have a tactile sign that also identifies that door. The person who is blind can tell a door. A door has doorness about it. But there is no way for a person who is blind to know whether that door leads to the men's restroom, the women's restroom, the exit, etc. So the point of Braille and tactile signage is you put it next to the door and you identify what the person is going to find basically when they open that door. There are a lot of rules about how to make these signs so that they're actually readable by touch, and I'm not going to go into those, but there are very specific rules about how to make the signs. Make sure that if you deal with a sign company, you're dealing with a sign company who actually knows those rules, and you can test out the readability of the sign yourself. After all, tactile characters are made for people who might have become blind just a week earlier. They're people who understand what the shapes of letters are like, and if they become blind suddenly, they would be able, in a good sign, to read that word women or men or restroom or exit sign. So if you can read the sign with your eyes closed, then it's probably a good quality tactile sign. Braille, of course, is a different story. Now, the second category of signs are signs that are going to be used by people who do have vision. They have usable vision. They are nevertheless legally blind, but they do have usable vision. What do those people need? They need very high contrast. They need either very dark letters on a light background or very light letters on a dark background. They need lack of glare. When you see the signs in this hotel, by the way, are terrible. They have almost no contrast whatsoever. On top of that, well, they're illegal in almost every way that I can imagine, to tell you the truth. But when you have signs that are shiny, hotels love polished brass. They will put evacuation plans that are supposed to tell you how to get out of the building in an emergency on polished brass. I go up and look at it, and I could put my lipstick on, and then, you know, looking at that sign, but I would not be able to tell how to get out of the building in the case of an emergency. So you want a non-glare surface. You want very, very high contrast. And you want readable type. You want type that is not decorative, that isn't fancy. That there are a lot more rules than that, but that gives you the main thing. Now, we're talking about signs that may have tactile characteristics and have visual characteristics at the same time. And then we have what we call the accessibility signs. And those are the signs that tell people how to find accessible features. So we don't make people go all the way to someplace that's inaccessible and then say, hey, this isn't accessible. You have to go back all the all the way someplace else.
It happens.
Oh, God.
You need to tell people at what we call a decision point so they don't have to retrace their steps. If you have a staircase that's visible, then as soon as you possibly can, where people see that staircase, tell people how to get to the elevator instead. If you don't have an elevator, if you have no way to get upstairs, then, you know, you may need to say something like, we apologize for the fact that we don't have access to the second floor. Please ask the receptionist, you know, how you may do X, Y, or Z. So, and try to make it brief, to the point. People don't want to read an encyclopedia. Also, if I could just add one more thing, because I see it constantly. People think that because tactile characters have to be uppercase. Now, that's because tactile readers have a very hard time reading lowercase letters. They think all signs have to be uppercase. Uppercase is difficult to read when you have quite a bit of it. So when you have signs that inform and direct and are not tactile, please do everybody a favor and make them upper and lowercase. Large, clear, contrast, all of that good stuff, but upper and lowercase is great, except for something like caution, danger, etc. So also, when you use accessibility signs, please use the proper symbol to go with it. If you want someone with a wheelchair to know something, and put that wheelchair symbol on there so that they can see it across the lobby and say, hey, there's a sign maybe that's going to give me some useful information. If it's a sign directing people to where the text telephone is, then use that symbol and so forth. One very kind of not very amusing thing that happened to me once when I was with several people with disabilities at an ANSI meeting in Washington, D.C., and we wanted to go out to eat, and we were in a large shopping mall. And we were trying to figure out how to get any place because we would walk along a little ways and then there would be three steps up and a little platform and then three steps down. This architect evidently thought that would be fun for people, you know, make it more interesting. And we were trying to figure out how to get where we wanted to go. And we kept looking around for some kind of a sign that would tell us how is somebody in a wheelchair supposed to get around. And all I could see was a sign with the sign for assistive listening systems, these loop systems that Francie talked about. It's an ear profile with a kind of a diagonal line through it. And I thought, gosh, I wonder what kind of an assistive listening system they need inside a shopping mall. Well, finally, out of curiosity, I just said, I'm going to go over and read that sign. What did I find out when I went to the sign was a text that said, people in wheelchairs should use this button to call an attendant to come and help them. And because of this, they thought they should put the assistive listening sign. So we did call, by the way, and two big hulking guys came and said, well, what we have to do is lift your wheelchair, which they proceeded to do, and they said, we hope you complain because our backs are getting really, really bent out of shape over this. But so anyway, signs are really important. They can help with accessibility. They can help people find things. They can help people who are deaf and hard of hearing, et cetera. And I hope that you'll think very carefully about the signage systems in your facilities. Thank you.
Do you have a webpage you would recommend?
Well, I have a webpage that gives a lot of information about the signs. And it's called www4adasigns.com.
adasigns.com.
Sharon also tells me one of her favorite stories is she does this one building, and what do? They put the blue sign on a blue wall and then put a garbage can in front of it so that when the blind is going down the room, they're trying to find it, right? But it's behind the garbage can, so you can't find the sign. And if you're vision impaired, you can't find the blue sign on the blue wall. We don't do those things. They have to be kept clear. You can't put things in front of it. And my other favorite thing is when they put the sign in the middle of the door so you can get hit by the door as it opens up in the face. Don't do that, okay?
Speaking of garbage, I have what may be an ignorant question, but are there any rules about how frequently you need to clean these signs for sanitation purposes if people are constantly having to put their hands up on this stuff?
There aren't any rules about that, but there is a rule that you have to maintain them. So if you clean them, what you'll find is if you use a type of sign like photopolymer that has paint on the front surface,
you're in trouble.
You're going to start wearing the paint off and the sign will be
bleach
useless.
Bleach will do it too if
we do not like those kinds of signs for that reason.
Chandra?
I just wanted you to address the issue of universal signage related to people with limited English speaking ability or people with different languages. Such as the hearing, the sign of the ear, so that can you just talk about that a little bit because we have people of different languages.
Yeah, I know our time is really limited. I'll just make this really quickly. Pictograms are, of course, of help with people of different languages, at least so that they can find restrooms, information desks, and so forth. We also have used something where we number rooms and then put changeable directories with different languages, you know, so in other words, it would tell what the room is, tell the number in four or five different languages, and that's a good way to send people around buildings with different languages.
one of the things I did find out in almost every station is that most of the rooms do not have signage, and if they do, it's not proper signage, and if they did, it was too high. And that's something we really need to take care of in every single station, is putting in proper signage, especially directional, because you were guessing what room you were at and what room you were in and so on, and that does need to be taken care of, and that was in all of my reports. It's one of the cheapest, and it's one that's readily achievable. And talk to Sharon if you want, and if she isn't local, she can maybe try and help you find somebody local. But she'll also make sure that nobody's going to cheat you, because there are companies who will try and cheat you. And she'll make sure you know who to go to and who not to, so you don't get stuck with excessive signage also. I want to remind you of one thing, too. Right now, 20% of your population has a disability. As the baby boomers come along, and they are going to age out, two of the things that affect them the most is vision impairment and hearing impairments. And so you want to keep thinking of that. As they age out, those are two of the biggest things that affect them, hearing impairment and vision. So guess what? You really want to deal with this. Okay, we need to cover, if nothing else, we really need to cover what is readily achievable to do. What are reasonable accommodations? Because those are the things you're going to want to deal with first. What are the things you can fix first? When you look at the reports I did, I give you a list of reasonable accommodations and readily achievable to try and figure out what are the things you can deal with first. When you're doing your ideas of what am I going to fix, you got to look at what can we afford to fix first, right? What are the things we can afford to take care of? And you got to start figuring out what are the things we can deal with first when we're raising money to make the ADA fixes. Because that's going to be the hardest one. That was like what you were talking about, Lonnie, when you were trying to figure out. And what are these things? Like when you're doing a path, the first thing the ADA requires you to do is path of travel from getting outside the door into the building. When it asks you to look at what are the first things I can do, can I get through the front door? Okay, that's the first thing it says. Can I even get in the building? So that's the first thing it says you look at. Can I park my car? Can I get out of my car? Or the van I come in? Can I get up the path? Can I get through the front door? If you can't do that, it doesn't matter about anything in the building if I can't get through the door. Okay, so you're looking first at your path of travel. And we had to deal with that at a couple of the buildings. My favorite was New York, because I couldn't even get from the bus stop to the building at first because there wasn't even curb cuts. And I had gotten lost, so that was fun. But in the other stations, for instance, when I got to Texas, they have this great parking spot. It had a little brick. But the first thing I realized is when the gardener came, I realized they have a great path of travel down the side of the building after he blew everything away. It just has to be kept blown away. It has to have good lighting. And then you get down to a ramp. So you have to have signage that says, guess what, path of travel, the ramp is down there. I had to go look for the path of travel. Had there been a sign there, I would have known immediately, right? So Sharon's right. You put a sign that says that's where the path of travel is. Same thing in New York. New York, you got to go around to the back of the building to get in. There's no signs there that say that. Now, that isn't the radio station's fault. But the radio station can make New York put a sign on that says go to the back of the building, as much as I hate back entrances. But that's the only way you can get in New York also. Signage. You got to know how you get in. In Berkeley, you got that ramp when you go in and you park and you come down that ramp. We got garbage cans blocking the ramp and bicycles. And you've got this wonderful bar that helps people who have problems with when they're walking. You can't use the rail because you're going to run into the garbage cans and the bicycles. It has to be kept clear. And every time I turned around, the garbage cans are right back in the way. So even when you have something you can use, if it's blocking it, it doesn't help you. So you've got to make sure. And you've got to tell people when you talk to them on the phone, we have a ramp, we have parking, we have this, we have that, this is what you use. But you've got to make sure people know it's there, and then you've got to keep it clear so they can use it. You have a parking space in Berkeley, but it's not correct. You have a parking space in L.A., but it's not correct. So you fix it. So that's the first thing you deal with. And guess what? Those parking spaces are easy to fix. They cost nothing. If you had somebody else do it, it wouldn't even cost you $200. And that's if you got somebody who really stuck it to you. And like I say, you can go do it yourself. Cost you two cans of paint and a couple of signs.
And have you let the managers at each of those places know what's wrong with those spaces and how to fix
it? It's in the report. Yeah, it's totally in the report, everything. Okay, that's your cheapest fix that you have there. It's so easy to do. Okay? So, boom.
Just Greg, just out of curiosity, with this report, are the managers sort of documenting each thing they fix so we have a sort of record of all the things that were done to respond to the items in the report?
That's a question that you should ask them this evening. They know that they should be talking to contractors, and they have done some things, but
We
haven't received a report yet back from them.
Thank you. You know, of course, that mic you were speaking into was dead, right?
I realize that now.
Okay, so you start, like I said, you start with your path of travel. That's where you go. Then you get through the door, and now you start looking. Okay, putting up signage is not going to be that expensive. You do your signage. Then you start looking at, and what you need to do is you have to have your board of directors at each station sit down with your staff, with your management, and you sit there and say, what can we afford to do in what order? And you make your readily achievable list and your strategic long-range list, and you make your commitment of what you want to do. And that's how you get the stuff done. Okay. Now, Lonnie, did you want to ask some questions now, the questions you were trying to ask earlier?
Yeah. Well,
And Ben can help me answer, and Sharon, too.
And as a time check, we've got about another 12 minutes left after we've added, 13 minutes left after we add on the time from the break. So let's make sure we hit the crucial points.
Yeah, well, we're at the point of doing our budget. And thanks for laying out the readily achievable. And I agree with you, those are easy to do. I see that as something that's really doable. But it's that second level that I'm holding my breath waiting for. And if we could get to those instead of guessing around cost, no one knows, but guessing, it's important that we have that for purposes of budgeting, and we have about 2 or 3 weeks in which we could either have those items in the budget or not have them. So that's the kind of timeline we're working with.
Okay. The one thing that you're going to have some problems with in some of these things is that you've had 17 years to do some of this stuff under ADA, and you've had since 1973 under 504 to do some of this stuff. Hi, Jane.
I think we passed the 17-year mark.
Right, the anniversary just came and went of the ADA. That's the difficulty. So it's like we've got to find the money for some of these things, so you've got to put it into the plan no matter what. No, the one thing the ADA does not do is make you go bankrupt, okay? The ADA is not going to make you fold, close your doors and say you go bankrupt or do it. It never was intended to do that. That was never the intent, okay? You need to understand that. But what it does do is says you have to reasonably be working at doing this step by step. So what you have to do is be reasonable. You have to sit there and say, okay, we've got to do this, 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 and this. How can we raise the money for step one, step two, step three, step four? Okay. So what you got to do is, yeah, you've got to have people come in, you got to get prices on these things, and you got to figure what you can do in what order. And then you've got to be really, really reasonable. You're not going to throw good money into bad. Remember when we started talking earlier about what's reasonable to do, what's not? And if you find some of this stuff is not going to be reasonable, maybe it's time to move. Then maybe that's what you got to do. And in some of these locations, it might be either rebuild, add on, or move. But that doesn't mean you do nothing while you're going to do that. And that's what's been going. Sorry, guys. That's what's been going on too long. There's nothing in some places, and you can't do that anymore. That's not acceptable. That's why we gave you ideas of what you can be doing in between. That's why we laid out things you can be doing in between right now to be accessible while you're making up your mind what you're going to do otherwise.
An example of one thing that can be done readily and easily. Instead of going out and buying a brand new accessible desk, go out and get a couple of cheap 2x4s and stick them under the desk if you need to raise a desk for someone in a wheelchair. Other things. Get shared job responsibilities. If you need someone to get records and things off the high thing, make sure someone else can help with it. It doesn't have to be the person in a wheelchair or the person who's blind that has to pull everything.
That's in the report, some of these ideas.
You said earlier that there's grants available for some of these types of improvements. Can you give an idea of some of the granting sources?
Actually, I said in the report there's grants available for some of the training.
Not for the improvement, the capital improvements?
If you were to rebuild, I know there's definitely grants available for rebuilding. If anybody is familiar with KQED in San Francisco, they moved into a redevelopment area, and they built brand new. And they received tremendous amount of grant funding when they built Renew in the area, and they got a great deal of money. If you do the training under the technical center, the technology center, there's grant money for that. There's tons of money for that, for the training. And to get the software and the computers and so on, there's a lot of grant money for that. I know that's available. Making the station accessible, I'm not positive on that.
Yes, there are grants available. Do a Google search on grants. Read the various qualifications for funding for various foundations. There's hundreds and thousands of foundations throughout the United States that give grants for various purposes. I came across some when I was looking for grants for education that were grants for communications. So this is something that you might look at, doing Google searches and other types of searches on the computer. Yes.
Maybe.
I was just going to ask briefly about emergency evacuation procedures and if there's, you know, some kind of training with that, because, and especially I think of in New York when you're in those tall buildings and if you can't use an elevator or if the alarm is going off and they're making announcements that, or even on the subway systems that some people, just, you know, general things. I was just wondering how you all deal with those issues.
Contact your local fire department and ask them what to do. They can often give help with that, especially with the new FEMA regulations and other emergency preparedness regulations that have just gone into effect.
It's the problem with some of the buildings they're in. In Texas, you got to do a little bit about that one, the climbing up out on the roof and telling them to climb down the tower. Really wasn't a real good idea.
I've never heard that before. Until I read your report.
I have it on tape from your employees. That's what they were told, and I'm going, no, that one's got to be reworked out. I got a kick out of that one.
The fire department tells you something that's ridiculous.
No.
Point it out to them.
It wasn't the fire department. That's why I said they needed the fire department. That was kind of funny. But, you're up on a few floors up there in New York. I would definitely bring the fire department in there in. Because of where you're at. They're down near the World Trade Center in New York.
Yeah.
The
Red Cross is supposed to have new training and new brochures on it.
I remember this wasn't at WBAI, but a building that I work in around the corner when they were doing the emergency evacuations, and also because I been made to become somewhat more aware about issues. But when they're given the training, they didn't even mention anything about, well, if somebody, you know. I had to ask them because they didn't even automatically mention, well, what would you do if you have somebody who might, you know, need to use
Do they even have emergency backup generators there?
I mean, you know, they might, but there's so many things that can come up, you know, that you never know where you just can't use them. But this was just in one of the buildings in general, but there was never even any. And then when I asked, and they said, oh, well, you can call one of us, we'll have somebody come up, and, you know, if somebody is having, you know, problems with mobility or other types of impairments, but it wasn't even automatically talked about or referenced when they were. This was from the fire department in New York.
We'll be glad to meet with you afterwards, and maybe we can try and see if we can do something about that or work with you on it.
Okay, definitely.
Okay. There's so many more. See, this is a type of thing where we could go on a whole day on just ADA questions. That's the problem. When he said to you 2 hours, I said we'll be able to just cover the beginning of it. I would highly suggest that maybe at all of your meetings, it doesn't have to be us, but you bring in somebody to do ADA training at each meeting, even if it's an hour per meeting, because there is so many areas to cover and so many questions you could cover that would help you. So I would suggest you have other people.
On that point, see, the issue we have, and I've made this before, this membership turns over constantly. We have one-year terms. The people who we really need to be absolutely up to speed on it is our executives who are there regularly. And what this board needs is a sort of efficient way to be knowledgeable enough to be able to make sure that the executives are doing what's possible and what they need to do. So that's really what we need best. And if we could actually get some sort of or develop some sort of training resource so that every year when people come in, like Jane, for example, gave me the Section 504 information some time ago, a big booklet. It actually looked more daunting than it was when I went through it. It was big type and big pages, but something that the whole board gets so that we know what to do.
504, though, is not quite the same as ADA.
I'm aware. It was very clear about that.
Yeah, you really need to have the ADA, and I need to warn you, they're talking about redoing the ADA and updating it. And then what you get into is in each state, then you've got other laws. Like in California, you've got Title 24, which is even stricter than the ADA. You need to have at least, I think you need at least one access person as a part of Pacifica who stays on top of the law and can help you and who can answer questions and who can assist you. And I think Pacifica should hire somebody, and I don't care who it is, but I think you need someone who can keep you and make sure you're staying in touch with the law at all times, because you have a lot of questions, you have a lot of problems, and I really think it would help. We didn't even touch on hotels, how to arrange the hotels in advance, how to help people. I know what Donna's gone through, arranging the hotels in advance, when you have to move at the last minute, doing transportation issues, and so on. There's a lot of training that needs to be done for all of the stations, for all of the areas. And we haven't even touched unemployment, have we, Chandra?
No.
We haven't even touched unemployment.
Oh, my God.
I mean, there is so much, and it could be ongoing. And I really think that it would really behoove you to at least have an ADA employee, somebody different for employment, somebody different for access. It's really, I think, necessary.
And it is required under the ADA that any company that has more than 50 employees has an ADA person, ADA coordinator, or someone who should have additional training in the ADA. That doesn't need to be their full-time job, but they must have an assigned ADA coordinator. If you have more than 50 employees, it's required by law.
And by the way, have you met Dominga Estrada, I believe is her last name, our new human resources person?
I've talked to her on the phone.
Okay, she's here, and I hope before you leave, you'll make a person-to-person contact, at least so you...
She left.
She's left? Thanks.
Okay. So that would be my recommendation, and that you do continue on with someone, get a contract with someone to continue doing ADA training on a continuous basis.
Great. Well, thank you very much for the effort, the time,
and the
information. Do you
have some handouts for us? Do you have some handouts?
No.
No?
Okay, so again, thank you very much. I think
If you need further information on the ADA, there's several agencies. Pacific DIBTAC is one, and some others that are receive government funding. Make sure that you get it all.
For what it's worth, I did a Google search while you were looking, and it's actually, what I'm seeing is a lot of things at the state level, funding at the state level, but there's a huge list of these things, and finding the ones that would be appropriate for us wasn't straightforward. So any help you could provide on that would be gratefully appreciated. So thanks again, and we look forward to doing a better job of making all our places accessible. Thank you. Okay, so I think we should take a couple minutes break. I was talking to Greg. We've had to look at the schedule again because we're so far behind schedule. Lonnie has asked to do his report after dinner. I also have to talk to John about the technology report. Brian DeShazer, is Brian in the room? Okay. Brian, are you ready? Could you go now? Do you need the screen? Okay. Okay, great. And because Nathan Moore, I'll recognize you in just a moment, because Nathan Moore actually talked to the board quite a bit about programming yesterday during our three-hour block, I suggested that perhaps we didn't need to have an additional programming report. He agreed and Greg agreed. Is there any objection from the board to leaving that aside to help us reclaim some time? Okay, I'm not seeing any objection. Yeah, Margaret?
I understand that there's been a request from some listeners for at least about 10 minutes of listener comment. There are listeners who came specifically to the meeting today. They weren't aware that there was no listener comment in the afternoon session, and in fact, in future, we might want to divide up having a morning listener comment session and afternoon listener session to accommodate people who have work schedules and other schedules. So I wanted to find out if that would be at all possible for us to consider and put a time certain limit on it. I don't think there are that many people, but we certainly want to encourage participation on the part of our listeners.
Okay, so there's a motion.
And don't want to discourage them from coming.
There's a motion for an additional 10 minutes of time for public comment. Is there a second to that? Is there any debate? Seeing none, is there any objection? Okay, so we will have an additional 10 minutes following Brian's report and before dinner. I suggest we do it after.
Where's the sign-up sheet?
Make one.